helping taxpayers. I'm Terry Moore, sitting in for Pamela is away. She's on holiday. She'll be back with you on Monday. And a regular on this program on this particular day is Michael Mulligan. Mr. Mulligan is a lawyer. He's with his firm Mulligan at Tam and Pearson. And he's dropped by today to talk about some very important legal issues that some of us may not have the details on. We may be aware that they've done something about it, but what is the real story behind those headlines? First off, right off the top, good afternoon. Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well. Good afternoon.
On a very warm day. Listen, when I heard this news about the possibility of the mentally ill being able to hire a lawyer because they have been detained for whatever the reason, the headline talks about the inadequate legal aid funding for the mentally ill who are detained against their will under the Mental Health Act. Background that story for us and tell us what we're up against and why there has to be changes here.
The case that's garnered some attention recently started with a 39-year-old woman from Nanaimo.
Yeah.
And she suffers from bipolar disorder, depression, and anxiety.
Yes.
And she was in a Tim Hortons last month up in Nanaimo, and she recognized that she was starting to have suicidal thoughts, so she asked an employee to phone to get her some help. To go to the hospital. She was taken to the hospital ultimately, and after a few days, much to her surprise, she found out that she was had become involuntarily committed under the Mental Health Act. What is that? Well, the way that works is that if doctors have the view that somebody's detention is necessary either to protect that person or to protect others or to prevent a substantial mental or physical deterioration of a person, there's a process in place where certificates can be issued and a person can wind up being kept in hospital
against
their will. Moreover, in addition to simply being kept in the hospital, a person who's involuntarily committed in that way is deemed to consent to whatever medical treatment is prescribed by the doctors. So you have no further authority over what treatment or drugs you might be given. So if you're in that position, not only can't you leave, but the doctors can prescribe and you're required to take medication, treatment, whatever they tell you to do, you have to do. There's a process to review that. There's a review board. And the legislation has a timeline, sort of a scheme of how a person can apply for a review. And that review...
Stop for a minute. Yeah. You're telling me that the individual goes to the hospital...
Yes.
And against their will, they can be injected, they can be forced to take any kind of medication because a doctor or possibly a team of doctors...
Yes.
...deem it necessary to do so, even though the individual says, no, hey... I feel better now, and I do not want this.
You're out of luck. If you're certified in that way, the certificate's issued, then you have no further capacity to choose what treatment you're going
to
accept.
Do they get you to sign off?
No. This woman, who asked for the help voluntarily, went to the hospital because she wanted help.
Yes.
After she was there, the doctor, without telling her, commenced that process, and she was surprised to find that she had been involuntarily committed. She wasn't told about it. She didn't have to consent to it. If doctors have the opinion that it's necessary to...
A doctor or doctors?
It's an ongoing process. It sort of starts with a doctor issuing a certificate, and then there's a process for another one to issue another certificate if they still have this concern after, I think it's 48 hours.
Right.
And then there can be a further certificate filed to keep somebody in there for sort of a month, 3 months, 6 months, and they can keep signing off on these things.
Would they have access to her medical file to see whether she has a background on this, and then they make the decision based upon that or not?
Yes, and you would hope that the doctors are making appropriate decisions, but it's a very significantly intrusive thing to have done to somebody.
No kidding.
You can't decide whether you're going to take the medication, not take it. If they think whatever is necessary, they can just do it to the person. They're deemed to have consented. So it's important that there be a process to check on this, right? And the process to check on it, there's a person who's been involuntarily committed in this way can request a review before a review panel. And that's a review panel that would have a doctor on it, a lawyer on it, and somebody who's neither a doctor nor a lawyer on it. And the person could go before this panel make submissions to try to persuade them they should be let out. Now, that task of sort of going before a tribunal and preparing submissions is the stage at which for somebody who is suffering from a mental illness or and it's going to have a great deal of difficulty doing. And remember, having a mental illness is not grounds to keep you involuntarily in the hospital.
No.
The legal test would be, look, are you going to be a harm to yourself or others, or will there be the serious deterioration if that's you're not forced to remain there? But this case that started with this 39-year-old woman from Nanaimo, you know, she described, given her circumstances, how difficult it would be to do that on her own. The challenge set out other examples of people that were in a similar position. A 35-year-old man who is blind, doesn't read Braille, and suffers from mental illness, being confused, unable to deal with that sort of hearing on their own. Another 24-year-old man with brain injuries from a car accident, suffers from bipolar disorder. People that are in this spot are going to often not be in a position to go and competently prepare and run a hearing before a tribunal.
I guess
they need
not.
Help.
Sure they do.
And help is provided, legal aid help, as many of the people in this position are, by virtue of their position, also poor.
Right.
If you are involuntarily committed to a hospital and you suffer from a mental illness, there's a very high probability you're going to have limited income.
At this particular stage within the law, does that individual have the right to pick up the phone and phone a lawyer and say, before you do anything else, I'm phoning my lawyer because I have the right to be represented?
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. You can make phone calls, and up until 2002...
But that's not before medication, though.
That's right. Not before medication. They can be injecting you and forcing you to take pills and so forth. Now, prior to 2002 in British Columbia, there's an act called the Legal Services Society Act, and it's what sets up the organization that provides legal aid to people. The government doesn't do it directly, because oftentimes the other side of a case is going to be the government, right? You shouldn't have the government directly dealing with, you know, hiring you a lawyer when the government's the one trying to keep you in the mental facility or take your children away or send you to prison. So we have a thing called the Legal Services Society that's at arm's length. It's primarily funded by the provincial government, but not completely. And up till 2002, the Legal Services Society Act mandated what that organization was required to do. And it required, prior to 2002, that people who were financially eligible and were subject to civil commitment proceedings, like, you know, keeping you in a hospital, making you take drugs, you were entitled, that organization was required, to provide you assistance. The government amended the legislation in 2002. And now the way it works is that every few years, that organization, which still exists, enters into a thing called a memorandum of understanding with the provincial government about what they're going to try to do. No longer are they required to provide help for somebody in that circumstance. Now, this memorandum of understanding says such services may include representation for people that are in this position. And underlying all of that, is a serious lack of funding. In British Columbia, there's a special tax on lawyers' bills. Clients pay it, not the lawyer.
Right.
It collected in 2014 $171 million. The government only provides $74.9 million to the Legal Services Society. They skim most of the money off and use it for other things. So the society doesn't have enough money to provide lawyers.
All right, stay where you are. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with Michael Mulligan. Mr. Mulligan, a lawyer with Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson, and talking about the inadequate legal funding or aid funding for mentally ill. And we'll talk about other issues as well, including the continued legal fight over the assisted dying issue right after this.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. CFAX 1070, live on location.
Hey, everybody, it's Adam Sterling. We're live on location down at End of the Roll at 601 Boleskine Road here in Victoria. You save money. End of the Roll makes space. It is a match made in heaven. They barely have any room at all to move down here. We have some amazing deals taking place. All of their Mohawk brand carpet, 10% off right now. Mohawk, of course, makers of the Smart Strand, forever sustainable carpet product. The great thing about Smart Strand, 37% renewably sourced materials, including corn. They have carpet made out of corn, 30% less energy to produce this product, 63% less CO2 gas emissions. You can clean it with hot water and mild soap, no harsh chemicals required. Area rugs from just $199. We have laminate flooring from $1.99 per square foot. Vinyl flooring, price to move as well. Even new styles of plank, cork flooring, and composite core need to move today. It's all happening at End of the Roll, 601 Boleskine Road here in Victoria, or at endoftheroll.com. Come down and say hi. I'm Adam Sterling on location.
Saving up to $14,000 on a new vehicle is pretty much unheard of. Downplaying it in this radio commercial? Not a chance. Get the biggest discount of the year on a 2016 Ram truck with up to $14,000 in total discounts. Plus 0% financing for 84 months on Jeep Cherokee, Dodge Journey, and select Grand Caravan models. The Summer Clearout Event. See your Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram dealer for details.
Dr. Glenn Cornwell is dedicated to the prevention and correction of foot pain using direct-milled prescription orthotics. These orthotics are produced by the same machines used to make Boeing aircraft, making Dr. Cornwell's direct-milled orthotics the most accurate and durable prescription orthotics available, guaranteed for expert fit and function. Also, Dr. Cornwell's direct-milled orthotics are generally covered by most extended health insurance carriers. Dr. Glenn Cornwell Podiatry. Call 386-9353.
Does this sound familiar?
Honey, it's your turn to clean the bathroom. Honey? Honey?
If cleaning your shower walls is scaring you off, then Island Marble has the solution. They offer groutless designer panels that look like tiles without the maintenance or issues associated with grout. And they're completely mold and mildew resistant. Yet another bathroom innovation from Island Marble. Endless possibilities. Learn more at islandmarble.ca.
Hey, I've been meaning to thank you.
What for?
You recommended Aerial Roofing to us.
Of course. They're actually honest about whether your roof needs to be redone or not.
Well, Tom came out for a free estimate, and it does need replacing. We called just in time.
I'm Tom Williams, owner of Aerial Roofing. Sometimes your roof does need replacing, and if that's the case, we'll tell you. Aerial Roofing. We're honest about roofing. For a free estimate, get in touch at aerialroofing.ca.
In-depth talk with newsmakers and celebrities. Real Talk with Evan Solomon. Saturdays at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. on CFAX 1070. Bringing you deeper into the story. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
I'm Terry Moore in for Pamela McCall. She's on holiday. She'll be back with you on Monday. And hello to everybody along the Okanagan Network on AM 1150 and all of you here in Greater Victoria on CFAX 1070 as well. In the studio with Michael Mulligan. He is a lawyer, Mulligan Tam and Pearson, and talking about people who are mentally ill who are detained against their will under the Mental Health Act. I had no concept until you started to explain it to us in that detail as to how this whole thing has so many layers to it, but it's certainly not in favor of the patient. It's in favor of the system.
That's for sure. And you can imagine how frightening it would have to be an involuntarily committed person who has some mental illness, who's being told that they're taking whatever medication the doctor's telling them to.
Yeah.
They can't go anywhere. And when they call to get help with the hearing, which quite reasonably they couldn't be expected to properly prepare for or run, they're told effectively no, because the Legal Services Society doesn't have enough money to pay for somebody to help them.
But, you know, walking the streets today, people listening to this program, they've gone to their doctors on many occasions, and the doctor says, well, you're just depressed. And that now has, and a lot of these areas of depression have now morphed into things called bipolar. There's a whole series of issues that we bandy about now with on mental health that years ago meant something else, and today maybe more focused. But literally, hundreds of thousands of people across this country have these problems. How often do you come up against a situation where people are, and I'm going to use the term, maybe it's wrong, but incarcerated in a mental health situation against their will?
Well, it happens frequently in British Columbia. And one of the challenges is that by its nature, mental illness diagnosis aren't like a diagnosing a broken leg.
Right.
It's quite clear you have a broken leg. We can see it on the x-ray. Somebody's doctor's opinion that you're suffering from bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, and moreover, not just that diagnosis, but it's the legal issue of, because you can't just get detained for having bipolar disorder, the legal issue of, are you going to be seriously deteriorate if we don't force you to stay here? That is a separate issue from sort of the diagnosis of, do you have schizophrenia? It's a doctor saying, not only have I diagnosed that, then the second issue would be those ones. Are you going to seriously deteriorate if we don't involuntarily keep you here and give you whatever injections and drugs we think are suitable?
Right.
Or does the doctor conclude you're going to be a risk to yourself or others? That's where the legal issue arises.
All right. Let me take a couple of calls on this. Let's get to Pam. Pam, you're on CFAX 1070 along the network. Go ahead, please, to Michael Mulligan.
Yeah. Hi, Terry and Michael. I just wanted to say Rob Wypond, who used to be with Focus magazine, did a number of articles on this type of thing. And it is scary as hell. I actually spoke to someone who went for help because they were depressed. They were given 2 electric shock treatments. I mean, I think of this as coming out of the dark ages. And I don't think people realize what is going on in this province, and it is scary as hell.
I don't know about electric shock. I know about it, but I did not think that that could just arbitrarily been given to a patient because the doctor says, yes, that's what they need. Is that true?
If you're involuntarily committed and a doctor concludes that is the treatment you're going to get, whether you like it or not. And what is also out of the dark ages is when you have people with mental illness who are trying to challenge their involuntary detention, telling them, no, go try that out on your own. That is out of the dark ages. If we're going to be doing this to people, involuntarily committing them and forcing them to take medication and treatment, the very least, the bare minimum, is that we should have a review process that's fair. And a review process that requires somebody to go up against the psychiatrist, doctor, lawyer panel on their own is not fair. And
no
that
question.
Is the bare minimum. And if we, it should not, it cannot be in a civilized society, we say we've run out of money to ensure a fair hearing. If you can't have a fair hearing, then you should be letting the person out. You simply just cannot have a circumstance where we say we have money to keep you in here, do this or that, but we have no money to make sure that you're going to have a fair review of that.
And they use the money that is paid in, what, $126 million you said?
They collected $171 million, and they only provide $74 back.
And the rest of it's used, what, for a slush fund?
Goes to general revenue.
General revenue.
That's right. So there's a special tax to pay for legal aid, and the majority of the money collected is siphoned off into general revenue. And while the government is doing that, you have mentally ill people involuntarily committed in the province being told, no, you can get no help with your hearing, or you're going to have to wait in custody or wait in the hospital for 2 or 3 months before you can have somebody help you. That's our current state of affairs.
So listen, here, Pam, let's you and I do a bit of a role-playing here. You find out that I happen to be committed to a hospital under the Mental Health Act, and you pick up the phone, and you phone Michael Mulligan and say, Michael, Terry Moore is in the hospital under the Mental Health Act, and he's there against his will. Go over and see what you can do to help him get out.
Well, if you had counsel, several things would happen. First of all, there'd be a prompt application made for a hearing before the tribunal. There's a time period. They have to have that within 14 days for the initial one. A lawyer could also make an application in the Superior Court for habeas corpus or an application to review it there. It could be done fairly promptly. But to do that, you need somebody who's capable of speaking to witnesses, gathering the medical records, filing the appropriate application, showing showing up at the hearing and making appropriate submissions to them about how those things relate to the legal issue of whether that person should be kept in there. And we shouldn't leave that to the mentally ill person who's detained against their will.
But could you and Pam stop them from giving me medication that I do not want?
No.
But,
well, it would require an I could make an application to do that.
Yeah,
it would
but take by the time you get there, by the time Pam makes the phone call,
yes,
they've already started the procedure.
Correct. Whether it's electric shock treatment or medication
whatever,
or injection, whatever it might be. That's
you
right.
know, this is really scary. I mean, we've had so much promotion on mental health lately.
Yes.
And that people should go for help. Do you think people are going to go for help now when they hear that this poor woman knew that she was in bad shape?
And so she volunteered
it. She voluntarily went for help, and now they've got her confined.
Boy, good points, Pam. I appreciate the input, and I thank you for the call. Let me get one more call in here as well from Greg. Greg, you're on CFAX 1070. Go ahead to Michael Mulligan.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Do you know what? This is why people aren't coming forward. And if they're running into problems and stuff like that,
yeah,
if this is what's happening, would you come forward?
Good, very good point.
You know,
that's
like,
what Pam
come
said.
On, guys. You know, we're 2016. Come on, get with the program or create a program or something. You wonder why people don't want to come forward and get help,
so,
and then we're hearing this.
So Mike, is he essentially correct?
He's absolutely correct. The young lady in this particular case, she voluntarily sought help, wanted to go to the hospital as she was feeling depressed.
Yeah.
And then she was open with her thoughts and feelings and her initial assessment. And then, much to her surprise, found out a couple of days later that she was not free to leave. She was involuntarily committed. And they were, at that point on, going to decide what she was going to take and where she was going to go.
God. So where do you take it from here?
Well, there are two fundamental things that need to change. First of all, the legislation, the Legal Services Society Act, needs to be returned to a point where it's a requirement that they provide help for people in this circumstance, not they may do it because there's some memorandum of understanding. It's not optional that we have a fair hearing. That's a requirement. The other thing which has to happen is the government needs to properly fund it so that the organization can hire an advocate or a lawyer to help these people. It's the bottom line is that we shouldn't be in a civilized society in 2016 detaining mentally ill people, forcing them to take treatment, and then not affording them a fair hearing to determine whether that's appropriate or not. That's just inhumane.
We didn't even get a chance to get into the legal fight over assisted dying, but I'm astounded by some of the comments that you've made here today. Next thing that we have to know then before we let you go, we got about 45 seconds to deal with this. If a person has a family member at this particular stage and they apply to the courts to get them out, and if the government makes a decision to get anything done here, does it go through either through the health department, through the attorney general's office? Who handles the changes that have to be made to make this happen?
The funding is provided through the Ministry of Justice. That's who would. That's the ministry that would provide funding to the Legal Services Society.
Okay.
And that would be the ministry as well that would be responsible for fixing the legislation so that providing help to people like this isn't some optional function of a memorandum of understanding.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I get a chance to talk about the legal fight over assisted dying with Pam when she's in next week.
Very good.
All right. Good to see you, Michael. Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. We'll be back with you after we take a look at the 2:30 news at 1 o'clock here for Pamela McCall. Have yourself a good day. News is up next.